It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. It's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio Terry Snyder, and on the phone from Missoula, Montana, none other than David Cheesham. David Cheesham, how quickly you forget. It's summer in Palmer. That means it's gray and raining and cool. But I have here in
with promise of sunshine next week.
Yeah.
Very good.
Welcome to David Cheesham, who is somewhere to the east of us. David, you've been on this long trek starting in St. Louis on the 1st of April. We're looking at the 29th of June. Where in the world is David Cheesham?
Well, I am in Missoula, just overlooking the Clark Fork River, kind of the Bitterroot area, and have been taking a break. I got here a little bit early, and Melissa, my wife, flown in to meet me, and we've had a couple of days together. And I'm going to see my brother today, and then we'll ride out tomorrow morning.
When you say
I think my brother will meet me up at the Lolo Hot Spring. I'll be riding out there. And then it's up over Lolo Pass. So I've gone through three series of passes. And I've gone a Big Hole Pass and Lost Trail Pass. And then this will be the Lolo Pass.
And that's spelled L-O-L-O, not L-O-W-L-O-W. Right. Got it.
Correct. And all of this is really interesting historically with the Lewis and Clark. Of course, now, before those passes, I was at the headwaters of the Missouri River, and I actually climbed up to the rock where Lewis had the best view, and he could see where the three rivers converged to form the Missouri River. And that was the Jefferson, Madison, and Gallatin rivers. Oh. And it was just a beautiful, one of the high points of the area. And I forgot the name of the great landmark that the Native American tribes would converge upon and meet. And they were hoping to find some Shoshone chief there, but they did not find him there. But it was another amazing sight. More, I think, over near one of those passes, they did find the chief. And that was important. You know, they expected to be able to just follow the Missouri or tributaries and have kind of a water passage all the way west, and they found out that they could not do that. So they really needed to find someone who would trade for horses and to help them guide them the way through, and that was a very important. And Sacagawea was a Shoshone. Now, Sacagawea's story was that she was kidnapped as a very young girl in this area, in that Big Hole area, and taken into slavery, which is really an interesting side note, because when you stop at those roadside markers that talk about it, whenever they talk about York, who was Clark's slave who brought along that, they don't call him a slave, they call him an attendant. But when they talk about Sacagawea, they say that she was taken into slavery. There was a wonderful, very emotional meeting with the chief of the Shoshone, who they were going to ask help of from, and that's when Sacagawea recognized him as her brother, long lost brother, and that was probably why they were able to get help was because of that.
So David, you have been picking up some incredible historical details. There's just the sense I have looking at the map that you're, roughly two-thirds of the way through this trip?
Right. I think I figured out that I have about 600 miles left.
Wow.
Oh, well, you're beyond that. You're on the downhill slope, so to speak, once you go over the pass.
Right, yeah, except for the uphill part, I'm on the downhill slope.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know, David, if you're listening to, I can't believe I'm saying this to a former bookstore owner, but I've been interested in an audio book that I've been listening to this summer that's historically kind of interesting. It's The Worst of a Hard Time. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it talks about life in the Dust Bowl. And, you know, it's just an interesting look back at the way we've treated our, you know, our land and sort of the inception of air pollution and all kinds of stuff. So if you haven't read it or if you're listening to audiobooks, I'd recommend it. It's pretty newsworthy.
So, David, as you go through this western part of the United States, I'm guessing you have a time to think along the way as you pedal up the road. Yeah. What is coming into your mind that's different from when you started? Where have you gone to in this whole process of writing and thinking and reflecting?
Well, it's really amazing to see the changes in the land. Even between those two passes, the Big Hole Pass was all open, big sky, and then the Lost Trail passed by, you know, and that was just, I don't know, 40 or 50 miles between them. The trees were coming up, the firs and pines, and it was a very different piece of land, and the history was just amazing. Now, I also passed by the area where this is also very, you know, it's tragic, and it's even more tragic in light of Lewis and Clark, because they Lewis and Clark had a lot of help from the Nez Perce. And then 60 or 70 years after that, we were chasing them off their land. And so I passed by the part where the general had, or commander had promised them safe passage and then broke that promise and chased them down and almost wiped them out. And these were the same people who were so helpful to Lewis and Clark 60 or 70 years before that.
So, David, how's the political landscape been along the way?
Well, it's been nice to not be in the midst of that. I've seen, you know, a little bit of this, but the conversation still, the ones that I eavesdrop on are not about politics. They're about people carving out lives for themselves, and so there's not a sense of all the things that are kind of crashing down on in the country right now. So.
So one of the other questions that comes up is, having done this, what kind of recommendations would you have to listeners who might be contemplating, if not this particular length of a trip, extending themselves in a trip that is both physically and to some degree mentally demanding?
It continues to be just a wonderful, wonderful experience, and I don't think you can ever fully prepare for it, but I probably would have liked to have had a little bit more understanding in what to do with the bike and bike repairs and that kind of thing. But other than that, it's just a great experience. That feeling, and I don't know if I can describe it, but just the feeling of knowing that all of this land has passed beneath your feet and underneath the tires, and that you have transported yourself all of this way, and this ribbon of activity behind you and ahead of you. It's just a wonderful, sublime feeling.
Well, I expect when you get back that you're going to be a leading advocate for alternate transportation other than motorized. And you'll see a lot of, I think you'll have a lot to share in the efficiencies and inefficiencies of providing that infrastructure for people.
Mm, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And of course, Missoula is a great, great town for that. It's a university town, and there are bike lanes and all the major roads, and where there aren't bike lanes, there are bike paths, and they've got very good laws about yielding the lane to bicyclists. It's a great model.
It'd be fun when you get back to have a show just about that and bring maybe Pete LaFrance, been an advocate on the Palmer City Council about biking, and just have a community conversation about that and improvements that could be made.
Yeah, look forward to it. David, last comments before we finish. Anything you want to share?
Oh, just keep pedaling.
Okay. Thank you for calling in and giving us an update on things.
Pick up those hills.
Right.
Thank you so much.
Take care now. Bye.
Take care. Bye.
Well, David Cheesham, an intrepid bike warrior coming up the road all the way from St. Louis to Astoria, Oregon, 3,100 miles. Well, let's shift focus a little bit there. And for this edition of Valley Edition, one of the things that I thought it would be helpful to do, and I did a little research in preparation for this, and took a look at Ballotpedia. Are you familiar with Ballotpedia?
Mm-hmm. I am.
I find it probably of all of the resources that deal with elections to be one that seems to be even-handed and discusses things, giving the background. And I thought it would be appropriate for listeners, because we have primaries coming up before we have the October and November elections, just to be reminding about some of the important factors involved in a primary election. First of all, just simply the date, August 21st.
Yeah.
And there are really two primaries that are being focused on, one the Democratic primary, the other Republican primary. The candidate filing deadline was June 1st, and for this, what we're talking about is the Alaska legislature, first of all. And I found it interesting that we are in a kind of a special place. As of November 2017, coming from that Ballotpedia site, Alaska was one of 18 states under what's referred to as divided government.
Mm-hmm.
And not one of the 32 other states that is under a state government trifecta. And by that, as you know, and maybe listeners can learn, a state government trifecta is a term used to describe a single party government. One political party holds the governor's office and a majority in both chambers.
Sounds like the national politics.
There's a trifecta indeed there. But here in Alaska, as of last year, that wasn't so. So, for example, the Alaska House of Representatives has 17 members who are listed as Democrats, 2 as independents, and 21 as Republicans. But as it turns out, there's a coalition made up of Democrats, independents, and others that actually is what makes it a divided government.
We've had that before in the past.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Over on the Alaska State Senate, of course, there are 6 listed as Democrats, 14 as Republicans. When identifying what are referred to as battleground races, sure enough, Alaska is one of those places. They're described as being the primaries to be more competitive than other races and could have an impact on the general election. That's why we like to start with the primaries. And we also note that the media has noted that this is a notable primary election. And so the real question then is, as we look at this, who is running? If we're looking at, for example, the Republican primary, and we start on down and we say, who's actually listed there to run as governor? We have Mike Dunleavy, Scott Hawkins, Gerald Hikes, Michael Sheldon, and Mead Treadwell. And the notables there are 2 people, Mead Treadwell as a former lieutenant governor and Mike Dunleavy as a former state senator. Others have jumped in but have jumped out, and that's where we are. So that's the kind of situation we have for that governor primary over on the Republican side. Now, it gets a little more complicated, of course, because when we look at the Democratic situation, we don't have the big name in that race, and that's Governor Walker. He's the incumbent, he's the governor, and he's not running in that race.
Although Democrats are allowing people other than Democrats to run on their ballot.
Right.
He has chosen not to do that.
So that's a major shift in what we're talking about. Well, who does that leave? Well, it leaves pretty much the individual who many people have been waiting for to see just what he was going to do. And as we looked at the governor race, we said, okay, what we note is that we have a Democratic primary for governor. And in that Democratic primary for governor, what we do have is basically it seems to be a less competitive race. Would you agree with that, with Mark Begich as out front as the leader there?
On that ballot, yep.
Okay.
A question about that.
Okay. So the real result then will probably be Mark Begich, a former U.S. senator, who will win that primary.
Highly favored.
And then the question is, who over in the Republican race will win? And then, of course, we have the third candidate in the race who will be coming in a kind of an odd way, as he did previously in a successful run for the office of governor, and that'll be Governor Walker coming in.
So or not
if he chooses not to, but
right.
Every sign that I see says he's at this point intending to continue to run.
Yeah, there was an interesting article in the ADN this morning. I don't know if you read it, Mike, with Charles Wolford talked about, sort of a, started out by talking about Hollis French and how Hollis French at the last governor's race was actually running for lieutenant governor and that Byron Mallott was running for governor against Bill Walker. But at the end of the day, there was a coalition built between Walker and Mallott, and Hollis French very graciously and walked away so that there wouldn't be a split, a three-way split on the ballot. And I think that Wolford makes a pretty convincing argument of how that might be a better outcome than what could happen on a three-way race vote. But it does take a lot of putting aside egos. In Mr. French's case, there wasn't any handshake deal of another job down the line that we might see. He actually is now 6 years later, I guess, from his announcement when his intention to run for lieutenant governor. He's actually now on the Oil and Gas Commission. But other than that, it took a long time for him to actually get reengaged. He took a year of vacation and that sort of thing. So, you know, the primary is really, really important. I'm not so it's important on the Republican side because there's so many candidates running, and it could come down to a very big split there. Unlikely that anybody is on the ballot on the Democratic side will beat out Senator Baggage to prevail there. But what's going to be very interesting is what happens after the primary. And there'll be a time when even winners can not put their name on the general ballot. So this is going to be a highly watched race, not only just for Alaskans, but across the nation. People are really looking at the governor's race right now, a lot of governor's races. We have Governor Walker as an independent of rarity in the governor world. So there's going to be some eyes on Alaska, not just for this, but this morning we heard our Senator Murkowski, all eyes are turned to her and Senator Collins now about who the next Supreme Court justice might be. So Alaska's had some interesting politics, interesting races, but it's been primarily interesting to Alaskans. But everything has changed. What's up is down now. And all of a sudden, it's very, very important who's running in our elected races, not just in the lives of Alaskans, but nationally too.
Agreed. Well, continue on down a little bit. I've looked at the listing here in Ballotpedia for those candidates in the primaries for a seat of interest here in the Valley. We have one seat up, the two seats that are in this area primarily, and that seat is the one that is presently occupied by Mike Schauer, who was appointed to replace Senator Dunleavy. And it represents an area in the northern part of the borough. And that's going to be an interesting race because Mr. Schauer, a gentleman who, when he took the seat, I wasn't clear was actually going to run, did commit to run, and he's running in the Republican primary. And of course, there's an interesting competition in George Rauscher. Mm. George Rauscher has been occupying a seat in the House, of course, in Alaska State Senate, state legislature. And he's running also in this primary. And then, of course, there was Randall Kawaki, who was a sitting member of the Assembly.
Right. Rauscher's running in the House district, though. So he is not running. He originally was going to run for Senate, but he's defending his seat in the House. And former legislator Jim Culver will be running against him, which
That's
was a very,
right.
very big contested race. So really, in the Schauer's race, it's really down to Mr. Kawaki, who's on the Assembly and will not be on the Assembly because he's not defending his seat. He's up for re-election. He was also the pick of Governor Walker to replace that seat, which was Senator Dunleavy walked away from. So that one is going to be an interesting race to watch. Schauer's is new eyes. Definitely they have different ideology, if you've talked to both of them, but that will be a very contested race. But I think also the Culver-Rauscher could be a really interesting
Right. I'm glad you caught up with that because what Ballotpedia does, and it shows the difficulty sometimes of keeping track of all of these things. Ballotpedia says it tries to update, and mm-hmm. we know that you can look at APOC reports and other things. Mm-hmm. But looking at further on down, this is House seat District 9. Jim Culver, Pamela Good, and George Rauscher mm-hmm. are the three that are running in the Republican primary there. Right. And it's interesting to note also that the seat held by Delina Johnson is being contested by Edna DeVries, who sits as the mayor of the city of Palmer. So,
and on the there's a Democrat also running in that that race who probably will prevail there too, Eileen Patterson. So there's
right
that will there'll be a contested race no matter what on that one on the not only on the primary, which is really one to watch with ex-Mayor Johnson and present Mayor DeVries, and but also as they go into the general is whoever prevails there.
And it's interesting to also note that another seat in the Alaska House occupied by Mark Newman has some contest in the Republican primary with Andy Moore. And then over on the Democratic side, there's a James Chesbrough Jr. who had tossed his hat in. So we have a number of situations in looking statewide where individuals are running with no opposition in their primaries. Right. And yet we have certainly here in the Valley a number of people that have contests ahead of them. But we don't have a lot of time here to continue on with this discussion. We'd like to touch base as we move on further toward the actual primary on August 21st. I thought it would be useful for people to have some sense of what was beginning to happen out there and how all of that can affect change in terms of a number of the issues the legislature will be taking up in the next session.
Right, and we should also talk not only about that, but there is a local election, city elections, borough elections that'll happen in October that sometimes in the noisy season gets underlooked. There's also a movement, a group that is pretty intent on collecting signatures to put on the ballot to change the date of that election instead of October to have it blend in to the November election. And there's that's a good conversation we should have, Mike, about the pros and cons of that. Whether it gets on the ballot or not, we don't know at this point. But there is certain some energy about doing that. So we should talk about that in another episode.
Okay, we'll do that. Well, it's time to end this edition of Valley Edition. I want to thank Terry Snyder for coming in the studio. Thank you, Terry.
Have a nice holiday next week and be safe.
And David Cheesham for calling in and providing his inspirational description of where he is as he moves 3,100 miles by bike power. Talk with you next week.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.